Mr. Sherlock, Reel 7. We were talking about patrols, one in particular, the Tiano, but we were looking at the general problems that you had to face. And you mentioned the drainage ditches. Would the Germans ever occupy the ditches or the drier ones and sort of as defensive positions, or was it just a physical obstruction?
There were occasions when there were dry ditches which were useful for that purpose. But in general, the ditches were full of water. Remember that the period we're talking about is around about December.
October to December.
And it's winter, and there's a lot of mud about. And the ditches were really a great hazard on a night patrol. And what they also used to do, of course, was by trying to get round them, you often get disoriented. You had to be very careful to keep your sense of direction. But they were the problems, and they were, of course, this is what you also wanted to know if you were eventually going to put an attack in.
So you'd be part of your intelligence function was to find out how deep they were, where they were, that sort of thing. Would you draw a sort of map, or would you just hold it in your head?
I never tried to draw anything during the course of a patrol, mainly because it was night and it was difficult. But we always did a debriefing immediately we got back.
I'll come back to that then. Yeah, sorry, that was one problem. Would enemy barbed wire, German barbed wire, be a problem? I mean, would they put much barbed wire out? Or minefields?
I never came across any enemy barbed wire during the tour at all. What I did come across were personnel minefields. And what you had to be... These were great hazards, of course. Because what they were in fact, little trip wires. And but you if you were careful, you came across what appeared to be an easy crossing. You knew that there was a good chance of something being set up there, and you looked for it. We could find it.
Did you suffer casualties before you got that experience, did you start off with that common sense?
I don't know. I suppose that was when they. Experiences you picked up on the way.
Now,
I don't ever remember anybody trying to tell us how to find a minefield.
Now, for instance, on the one you took out on the Tiano, you did actually run into an enemy machine gun fire. That's on the 27th of October. I mean, do you remember that? That
yes,
was the Tiano. What exactly happened then?
That was heavy machine gun fire. We actually crossed the Tiano. And we...
Just waded through it.
Just waded through it, yes. Well, it wasn't a very deep river at all. It was about... I suppose about as wide as this room, not much wider.
So, 15 feet.
Yeah, it's only there. 15, 20 feet, something like that. And when we got to the other side, and we were travelling down a big... bit of hitch, and it was from that bit of hitch which we eventually got the fire to get the fire, and we returned it because we were hoping to get further, but in fact it became so heavy we eventually abandoned it and came back.
Would you be able to recognise the sort of fire you'd come under? I mean, would you recognise it as a German submachine gun or a like equivalent to your Thompson's, or would you recognise it as a heavy machine gun or light machine gun?
There was essentially, if I remember right, there was a set spend now and a certain amount of smasher. So we guessed actually there was a little pocket, so probably half a dozen Germans in a little pocket just there. And That meant, of course, that this was the outpost, probably, of a decent-sized colony. And so we knew that to be contented with when we made our eventual crossing of the sea.
So you retired? So
we retired, and that was... we didn't go any further.
Did you suffer any casualties that?
No.
Was fire generally inaccurate in those? I mean, at night, you know. I mean, the German fire. Well, obviously, must have been inaccurate on that occasion. But could you rely on outpost fire being fairly inaccurate, or could you often suffer a fair amount of casualties in the first burst?
It depended the sort of position you were in. If you were in a set position, a set defensive position. Then you could expect some very, very accurate fire from the Germans because they'd had a chance to find out where you were. But on these sort of things, it was always haphazard because they didn't know where you were. They were just fighting because they could hear somebody.
So they wouldn't have seen you, most likely, if they'd have heard you.
The problem is they heard us. I think if they'd seen us, they'd probably have...
So on occasion like this, you'd go back across the Tiano.
But of course, they would see us once we fired back.
Now, did you try and find your way round? Would you carry on looking?
Oh, yes, we missed about quite a bit.
Doing what?
We fired back and then moved. And then we had a couple of lads who were pretty good at this thing, who wriggled about and tried to find out exactly where they were. We fired again, and then we got fire from further up. In other words, if your head was there, we started up there, and we got some fire from there. And we decided that there was a fairly decent number of people there, and that it was obviously the outpost of something. So we didn't see any point in launching in and getting up.
So what did you do then?
We just withdrew, came back and reported.
Now, what would the debriefing be then? You mentioned you'd always have a debriefing. What did the colonel expect? Would it be always to the colonel or to your company commander?
It consisted of going to see the Italian intelligence officer, who then asked you what you'd found, what you'd seen. What the terrain was like, if you could identify any particular hazards, obstacles, and so on. And you told them as best you could, and you used the map or quite often an aerial photograph to try and mark things on. And that was it. If he felt you hadn't quite done the job, he would tell you. And that occasion, they were quite happy with
what. So the colonel would brief you, but the intelligence officer would debrief you.
That's right. There have been occasions when the intelligence officer seen you and he said, look, we better tell the colonel that.
That would be if you found something of...
The information was such of the importance that he would want to know straight away. And then he'd perhaps want to ask me questions. But generally speaking...
If you'd been on a patrol, whether you were fired on or not, would you be off? Would you be not on duty then the next day, so to speak, or would you be? If that was in a situation where that could happen, but would you be given a chance to get some rest or more rest?
It just depended what the next day's duties were. Really, as far as the Tiano was concerned, if I remember rightly. We crossed the Tiana the next day.
The 28th was the attack on Tiana, yeah.
So we did the attack next day and we were on it just the same as anybody else.
So what do you remember about that then? We might as well go on to that, the crossing of the Tiana.
I don't remember a lot about it, except that we did come across some of these personnel mines. And I think... It's one of our chaps got caught with them. They were nasty things. And these tripwires across, and you had to be very careful of them. And they were difficult to see. But we crossed that in daylight, and the opposition wasn't all that heavy.
Would you have artillery support on a crossing like that from your friends in? Would you have artillery support in a crossing like that?
Yes.
Would there be a sort of preliminary bombardment, or would it be just as you went in, they'd be firing?
Generally speaking, for a crossing like that, if we're doing it in daylight, there would be a bombardment for half an hour or so, something like that beforehand. And then as soon as it lifted, you'd go. But of course, I mean, I can think of instances where, having had the bombardment, you then set off and you start to get a lot of shelling the other way coming back. So you'd have to call an FOO to try and do something about it. And you might be able to get them to put smoke down in the direction that you wanted them to. Or you might say, we'll stop and see if we can get a little bit more of the bombardment.
So would your support artillery, they'd normally be attacking the infantry, not the German artillery themselves? I mean, because there's two roles of artillery. One is to flatten the German infantry, and the other one is to flatten the German artillery, I suppose. You know, your immediate support artillery, that's their job, was to take on the German infantry, was it?
Because at this stage, and I've got to be careful about this, at this stage, I was still just a platoon commander. And I tend, when I'm talking about getting the FOO to do things, that unless the FOO happened to be with me, I couldn't do that without my company commander. Now, later on, when I commanded the company, then I always had him with me, and we could do things more freely, as it were.
So now, going back to this Tiano affair, so you got across, you don't remember a lot about the crossing, you know. Then after that...
I remember we were getting over the river, but I remember when we got the other side, the plan was that the infantry would come up behind the tanks. The tanks would go first. We would come up behind them. We discovered that by being close to the tanks was the worst thing in the world, because in going for the tanks, they shelled the tanks and us. So we changed tack quite a lot, and we let the tanks go over one side, and we went over the other side. The tanks, when we got into the habit of working for the tanks, we quite liked it. But this was the first time we'd ever worked with them. And
had you ever trained? I know this is going back a bit. Had you trained with tanks ever?
No, we never. Not I remember. Have we ever trained with tanks?
So the first time you worked with them was in action.
That's right. Sure it was. I don't remember any training with the tanks. I think this really was about the first time there'd been any real possible tank country in Italy. With a flat spot.
So what do you remember after the tanks? You separated away from the tanks, and what happened then?
Well, we let the tanks... it was softened the Germans up, and then we moved in separately from them.
So, is there anything else you remember about this period, that you'd like to tell us?
No, I don't think there is anything else I remember about that. I think we closed the Tiano, but I think it's, I think I've said all I remember.
That's
nothing else to remember about it.
Right.
And after the Tiano business, I think we came out of the line again, didn't we? We did the battalion exercise reenacting the Tiano crossing.
Right.
did one or two small patrols from a little village, and I can't remember its name. But it was near the foot of Monte Camino, and the village of Calabrito. And I did one which took a lot of sappers, digging up mines. And it was a night patrol, and I suppose we took off a dozen chaps, protecting the sappers while they did their job. In the meantime, we had a company which occupied Calabrito and did some patrols from there, which prepared us for the attack on Camino and eventually on Cucurecho's spur, where I would win.
So, taking note in turn, do you remember much about the patrol protecting the sappers? Anything? Did anything happen? Were they attacked?
No, we didn't have any. We didn't have any real trouble. They did their job, and we just looked after them. And I don't think we were attacked or anything like that. There were no. But the funny thing was that there was a tremendous amount of activity, mainly on Camino and Casino, of course, which was further along. And you could see all the fireworks which were going across there. And for about three or four nights before we went out to Camino, the artillery and the machine gun battalions and everybody was just stomping there. And it was a wonderful sight.
So what happened next then?
Well, the battalion was given the task of passing through 56th Division, then on Monte Camino, and taking Cucurecho's spur. And we were a leading company. She came to the leading company. It wasn't a difficult operation at that stage because already a lot of fighting had been done by 56. But we consolidated Cucurecho's spur, and during the course of the action, I was hit in the shoulder by a sniper bullet.
What do you remember of it? I mean, were you aware that there were snipers about?
I was being stupid, actually. I was pointing out to the man that shot me. I was doing this, I think with his arm. Doing this.
Pointing with your left arm. And you were hitting the left shoulder.
Yeah.
And that was had there been many casualties before that?
One or two, yes. Yes, one or two. But nothing serious.
Where was the snipe? Where could you describe your positions on the spur?
If I could describe, the Cucurecho spur ran out from the west. Yes, the west side of Monte Camino, and but we were on ground overlooking. A similar spur, probably about 300 yards away, which the Germans held. And it was this contingent there which were making life difficult for us.
Had you managed to dig in at all, your little trenches or
well,
the slip trenches?
A little bit of digging in, yes. We had little sangers. And mainly piled up rock rather than digging rock, but we had surf protection, yes. We did that immediately.
And were you in any artillery fire, or was it just snipers and small arms fire?
No, it was mainly small arms that we were getting at the time, anyway. there was some mortared artillery fire from the Germans, but it wasn't that particular type. The Germans were naturally, I think at that stage, they were fairly demoralised because they'd had about 3 days of continuous bombardment. And so, although they always popped back, I think they weren't as aggressive as it might have been. Anyway,
when you were hit, were you aware straight away you'd been hit?
I was spun around. And in fact, I was taken very well straight out of the line.
Did it hurt, or were you numbed?
I think I was fairly numb. I don't think it was a serious hurt. It was when it happened, but immediately afterwards, I think it was just fairly numb. The stretcher bearers were there, of course, and they were very good. They wrapped me straight away and put the cigar on, and then took me out down to the regimental lighthouse from where I was.
Would the stretcher bearers give you any actual treatment, or would they just?
They only did.
And then what happened?
They might have done it in some cases, but they didn't. As far as I was concerned, that's what happened there.
And what happened at the first aid post?
I don't need anything very much more, except the arrangements for my evacuation to the hospital. Obviously, the evacuation wasn't an easy matter from that situation, because we had to go back, right over the back road by Mount Camino. And I walked, and I had an amazing experience, actually, walking back, because when we looked back, there was an attack going in on another part of the hill, and they were coming over by the guards. One of the guards was there, and I couldn't tell you which one was. And I'm not exaggerating. These chaps were doing what we as Durham would never have done. They were marching. In open order. They were marching. Erect. Marching over across. That marvellous sight, but to us, seemed a ridiculous sort of thing. We would always use them. This was an open hill, well spaced out and so on. It is an extraordinary sight from our point of view.
So you got back across the mount. How far did you have to go on foot? You were with other casualties, I presume.
Well, I suppose by the time we'd walked over the mountain, we'd come at probably a mile and a half, something like that. and then I went back to a hospital in Caserta. Canadian hospital, I believe.
And how bad was your wound when they actually got to have a look at it?
Well, I suppose in terms of wounds, it was it wasn't a terribly bad one. It was chipped the bone. It hadn't shattered it. It was a through and through shot from there, and it had come out the other side, but it had taken some wound with it. So it took a long time to get the arm going again, but I've never suffered very much from it.
So how long were you at Caserta Hospital?
I think it was Caserta about a fortnight, and then I went to Sorrento for recuperation to the British Congress and Network there.
Overall, did you feel you'd been well treated medically?
Very well, yeah. Oh, yes. The tension is very good.
And how long were you at Sorrento? What sort of facilities were available at the convalescent camp at Sorrento?
Oh, lots of physiotherapy the physiotherapy was very good, and but generally speaking, we got enough freedom. It so happened that whilst I was there, somebody discovered I was an accountant, so I got a job of auditing the hospital books, which wasn't a very good idea because I discovered a fair amount of what you might call slack or careless work, and it took most of my time.
Now, was there any feeling, I'm not suggesting about yourself, but generally about the desire for what the First World War they called a blighty wound? I mean, did people want to get back to England when they were wounded? Or were they fairly...
No, I think my own recollection is the majority of people I came across who had wounds were a good deal more concerned about getting back to their own battalion than anything else.
And you shared that, did you?
Oh, yes, I did. You made relationships in a rifle battalion anyway, an infantry battalion, which were quite unique. And somehow or other, to have to start again to make the same sort of relationships. Because when you didn't want to face up